Everyone has a story. How they got here, where they met along the way, the choices they made, the dreams they are chasing. Welcome to Anthologies of Hope. Thank you for joining us again this week for another excellent interview here on Anthologies of Hope. As always, I am your host, Rick Osowski, and I am not a mental health professional in any way, simply a mental health advocate with a passion for storytelling. As we close out the month of May, we also close out Mental Health Awareness Month, and all of our favorite mental health organizations shared a plethora of information and resources across all their social media channels, Hope for the Day and To Write Love on Our Arms included. This is a great time to adopt some of them into your tool belt for when they can come in handy, either for yourself or having them readily available for a loved one. One last event to close out Mental Health Awareness Month activities is the Humboldt Mile. This Saturday, June 1st, in, conveniently enough, Humboldt Park here in Chicago, and sponsored by Dark Matter Coffee and 312 Running Club. The Humboldt Mile is a USATF certified chip-timed one-mile race that is a celebration of life with 100% of the proceeds supporting Hope for the Day's proactive suicide prevention programs. For more information, check out onemilerun.org to register today and get locked in for an awesome Nike Race Day t-shirt. And if you're not familiar with the layout of Humboldt Park, I'd advise you to check out all of the arrival details listed on the registration pages so you don't end up making your own run be 2 miles through the park beforehand like I did last year when I parked on the wrong side. Getting down to business this week, we are bringing you the May edition of Conversations Cafe, titled Partners in Prevention, recorded live from Sip of Hope Coffee Bar in Chicago's Logan Square neighborhood. For future installments of Conversations Cafe, and there are plenty planned throughout 2019 and beyond, check out peervention.org and Hope for the Day and Sip of Hope's Facebook pages for more details and notifications when new events are listed. The episode is dedicated to the forward-thinking businesses that help to support the Hope for the Day mission and amplify the message that it's okay to not be okay. This week's installment brings interviews with representatives from 3Run2, Sip of Hope Coffee Bar, Dark Matter Coffee, and Hope for the Day's founder and CEO, Johnny Boucher. Additionally, we recently celebrated the one-year anniversary of the Sip of Hope Coffee Bar on May 1st. As our listeners know, Sip of Hope is the world's first coffee shop where 100% of the proceeds go towards proactive suicide prevention and mental health education. We at Anthologies of Hope love partnering with Hope for the Day and Sip of Hope staff for the Live Conversations Cafe events and are excited to see where they grow in their second year. During the anniversary celebration, we recorded over 2 hours of interviews with SIP staff, Hope staff, friends and partners of Hope for the Day, as well as local community members supporting what the coffee shop stands for in both their professional and personal lives. Mike Finopel of Hope for the Day will be joining us to help with a fun supercut episode of all of these interviews, including Johnny Boucher, founder and CEO of Hope for the Day, members of the Dark Matter Coffee family, and Cook County Commissioner Luis Arroyo. That episode will be coming your way very soon to wrap up Mental Health Awareness Month. The SIP Anniversary Supercut episode will also wrap up our awesome second season here at Anthologies of Hope, but we'll keep bringing you the Live Conversations Cafe events as they happen each month as bonus content. We will be back for Season 3 in the fall, or spring for our listeners in the Southern Hemisphere, branching out from the Hartkamp family with a whole new host of friends in the mental health community, conversation, and journey, featuring our traditional long-form interviews. As we bring Season 2 to a close, don't miss out on our epically curated playlist with contributions from each of our weekly guests. You can find it at anthologiesofhope.com/playlist. You can also find our Season 1 playlist under our user account on Spotify or anthologiesofhope.com/playlist-season-1. Each week, we'd like to remind you that if you're in a time of crisis, we'll be covering a range of potentially difficult topics. Please use this as a warning to seek help and come back to listen once you're in a more positive season. If you are in need of help, an abundance of international resources can be found on the Find Help pages of Hope for the Day and To Write Love in Our Arms. Hope for the Day can be found at hftd.org/find-help, and To Write Love in Our Arms can be found at twloha.com/find-help. As always, you can find us at anthologiesofhope.com, on Facebook and Instagram as Anthologies of Hope, on Twitter as Anthologies Pod, or email us directly at anthologiesofhope, all one word, no punctuation, @gmail.com. Please like, subscribe, and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or wherever you're finding us. And finally, a very big thank you to everyone who has listened this season, who has joined us at our live events, and we look forward to bringing you plenty of these much-needed conversations well into the future. Without further ado, join Carl, Nico, BK, Kyle, and Johnny with this week's Conversations Cafe, Partners in Prevention.
Hey. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
Well, one more time. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
Welcome to this night's episode of Conversations Cafe, presented by Anthologies of Hope and Hope for the Day, hosted live out of Sip of Hope Coffee Bar in Logan Square. Today we have a very special episode dedicated to talking about community and mental health with Hope for the Day's fourth annual Humboldt Mile, presented by 312 and Dark Matter Coffee, just 2 weeks away. So today, what we're going to be focusing on is discussing that when Hope for the Day talks about proactive suicide prevention and starting the conversation on mental health before it adversely impacts your lives, this is a mission that we need to get others involved in. This is a community-developed mission. And so Hope for the Day is not alone on an island. If you look at Sip of Hope, there's a very prominent declaration right above the Dark Matter Coffee symbol. We are in this together. And it's really important to understand that to make this mission happen, we need to have this conversation be something that individuals are starting in all their communities. It's not just going to work with one big billboard or a flashy commercial to talk about it's okay not to be okay. So tonight, we're going to be focusing on some of Hope for the Day's partners in preventions, individuals who have decided to bring this conversation of proactive prevention into their community spaces and who have aligned with Hope for the Day to help press the conversation and raise the visibility of information and resources. And specifically, our partners in prevention tonight are those focused on the core founders of the Humboldt Mile. So without further ado, we're going to start off with our first guest, the founder of 312, Nicholas Bernal, aka Nico, is going to be our first guest. Nico, thanks for coming out.
Thank you for having
me. Appreciate it, buddy.
Thank you.
So without a whole lot of other preamble, I kind of want to just start with, tell us about 312 and like where did this all come from and the running thing.
How much time we got?
Till 8.
Okay, so the abridged story is that my sister and I, Micaela, who's taking photos up front, shout out. We started 312 back in 2013. And prior to us starting 312, we had been active and running for quite some time. I actually started running myself in late 2009, and really it was just about trying to kind of get active and get fit and look good for the beach because I was taking a trip to Rio de Janeiro. And we decided that we wanted to do something in our community, in our neighborhood, that we can simply like walk out the door and maybe get together with some of our neighbors, run a few laps around Humboldt Park, and then afterwards socialize over maybe some beverages and tacos. And it was originally at Bullhead Cantina. Back when we started 312, there was really nothing happening west of Western Avenue. So we were involved in the running community, as we still are. And as some of you may know, a lot of running happens in more affluent neighborhoods or on the lakefront or not necessarily in neighborhoods that maybe aren't, you know, familiar with the sport, for lack of a better phrase. So it was very important to us that we were kind of getting people involved and talking about running and actually running and showing these things through our lens. And it was very important to us that we were actually documenting, you know, what we were doing in the neighborhood and how active we were being on social media so that we can kind of engage not only with our community, but also with people throughout Chicagoland area and later and much later throughout the world.
That's great.
Yeah.
You know, something I want to touch on this a little bit more with the creation of 312. First of all, for folks who are living in the Logan Square and really this sort of greater Western area, one of the cool things is nowadays, on any certain given number of nights and sometimes days, you can see, you know, this, you know, this really distinct, bold, black and white 312s, and you can see whole squads just rolling up on 606 or going up and down trails. So with part of the 312 creation story, I think one of the things that I really wanted to know about is sort of where does that sort of flavor come from of like the design, the aesthetics, the sense of the culture behind like the running? Like,
yeah.
You know, sort of walk me through that a little bit.
For sure. Well, I think that, you know, my sister and I were very fortunate that culture and music and art was always, you know, pretty important in our household. And like, I know me personally, like, you know, my background and my taste in music is hip hop. So I'd like to think that, you know, 312 was kind of birthed out of our love for music and for culture and for art and kind of from a hip hop type of background. You know, I think that growing up and, you know, I'm in my 40s, so I've kind of seen like hip hop from its creation through kind of what it is today. I think that it was something I always identified with. I think it was, you know, cool and cutting edge and kind of rebellious, and that's how we felt about our running. You know, I think that when we were running and when we started running, if you look at a race, you see like, it's like a highlighter pack. It's like you see highlighter yellow, highlighter pink, highlighted blue, and that's not how we dress, and that's not necessarily how we kind of identified ourselves. We wanted to run, and we wanted our colors to be something that we can run in or even just kind of wear casually and still feel confident and look good. So I think that's where our aesthetic was birthed out of.
So it's really sort of like putting a, sort of a lifestyle together on top of like the experience of running, not just as like a hobby. It's like a
lifestyle, and a little bit more about that. You know, the thing about running or fitness is, if you just want to get fit, going to the gym can be like a pain in the ass because you kind of look at it as a chore. It's something that you have to do because maybe you want to look better or you want to feel better. But once you kind of adapt fitness or more so running into your lifestyle, it gets to be easier and it gets to be something that you look forward to doing. So for us, the lifestyle was huge because, you know, we wanted to make sure that running, at least at 3-Run-2 and in Humble Park and Logan Square, was accessible to everyone, regardless of whether you're a marathon runner, an ultra marathon runner, you've never ran a 5K, you're still on the couch, or you just have a desire to run. We wanted to make sure that everyone felt comfortable coming to 3-Run-2. And I think out of that birthed this lifestyle where it's okay to come and hang out and to be in smelly running clothes afterwards, socializing with your friends. It's okay to go to sleep early on a Friday night because you got to wake up early Saturday morning to go out for a run. It's okay if maybe, you know, you're not the person to close down the bar anymore and you're shutting down brunch now, because it's all a part of our running lifestyle.
So it's like, it feels like, and I've been around, I'm not a runner, not yet, I'm working on it.
But we're all runners.
Run to the door for the pizza. Hey, but I'm
run for the police sometimes.
a little bit. But one of the things I've noticed when I've spent time around that crew is, it doesn't feel like there's like an elitist thing. You know, it's not like, oh, what's your mile? You know what I mean? So is that sort of imbued in like, is that actively enforced? Is that just, it seems like it's a really welcoming experience, like being part of 3-Run-2. Like, is that true? Or
It is, and I'm glad that you observed that. So, I mean, you know, when we were first kind of getting 3-Run-2 off the ground and we were thinking about, okay, what are our values and what do we stand for and what's our ethos? It wasn't about how fast you are or how far you can run. It was more about like breaking bread with the people in your neighborhood and being able to kind of, you know, hang out with and learn from people of different cultures. And it was more about really giving your best effort. So I'd like to say that, you know, us as runners and me myself personally, I take running very seriously, but I don't take myself too seriously. And I still want to have fun. And for me, it's like, I can have a real shitty race and be okay, because the thing that happened prior to that race was months of preparation with loved ones, with friends. It was a journey, and it wasn't necessarily about the destination. So everyone is welcome. And, you know, luckily, I think these things have kind of sorted themselves out. We haven't had to, like, kick anybody out or anything along those lines, because I think people either come out and have a good time and choose to come back out, or they never come again. And that happens often too. So
that's dope.
And that's perfectly fine.
That's great. That's dope. And with it, I think, so Hope of the Day is a nonprofit doing suicide prevention. There's groups and NPOs out there that do walks, that do athletic events. But our approach, when we decided considering this idea of doing a run or something, was really, we wanted to, beyond just community, the connection between sort of physical interaction and mental health was really strong. But we didn't really know, we weren't experts in how to do these things. So how we even thought this might be possible, doing the Humboldt Mile, which is going to be June 1st, right down there at Humboldt Mile. There's still time to register.
OneMileRun.org.
We connected with you through Dark Matter Coffee in a sort of a 6 degrees of separation or connection. And the minute Johnny Boucher, our founder, and I met you.
Yeah.
You and Michaela specifically.
Yeah.
The vibe, like, locked up. So, two things.
Yeah.
One, where does 3-Run-2 intersect with Dark Matter?
Yeah.
And then, well, let's start right there.
Okay.
Like, where does 3-Run-2 intersect with Dark Matter?
For sure. So when we first started running, we would run on Thursday nights, and we still do run every Thursday night, rain, sleet, or snow. We actually do not cancel runs whatsoever. In the history of 3Run2, which is about 5.5 years, we canceled one run, and we regretted it immediately after. And people still showed up and ran. So anyway, we also run Tuesday morning, Tuesday evening, Saturday morning. And when we initially started our Tuesday morning meetup, it was at Dark Matter Coffee at the Mothership on Western in Chicago. And one of our runners, DJ Intel or Jason Deckler, he was connected to Dark Matter Coffee. And I think they reached out to him because they knew that he was a runner. And he immediately shared the opportunity with us. And that's how we linked up.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah.
And just so people understand, Humboldt Mile, the core foundations, when we talk about 3Run2 and Dark Matter Coffee and Hope of the Day, is that we brought something to it, Dark Matter brought something to it, and 3Run2 brought the technical expertise and guidance and consulting and strategic understanding of obviously how to produce a run that really made this a serious thing. This was the biggest thing Hope of the Day had ever tried to do as an organization in the beginning, as an undertaking. And, you know, Dark Matter has done a million great pieces of production, but they'd never done a run either. So 3Run2 was really, if we didn't have the 3Run2 piece, Humboldt Mile doesn't happen. Because in the very beginning, we were spitballing like, oh, it'll be this, it'll be that, it'll be this. And we just had like that straight cutting, you know, approach that you have. I was like, no, bro, like, can't do this or can't do that. And we actually were looking at trying to do like a 5K in the beginning. And you actually were the core idea behind this idea of 1 mile. And we immediately jumped onto it because, you know, prevention and the conversation, just one conversation, you know, can help start the process for prevention. So Tell me about mental health and that intersection with 3Run2. Like, what does that mean to you? Like, why did you even agree to like jump on with us on that?
So I think, you know, initially it was something we were interested in because, you know, we definitely felt as if Dark Matter was an awesome brand to collaborate with, and we weren't too familiar with Hope for the Day, but we figured if they were familiar with you and they had a good relationship with you, then we were definitely willing to check it out. I think initially, you know, we were always interested in producing a race, but I think producing a race is definitely something that takes a lot of involved parties to pull off if you're going to do it the right way. And it's something that my sister and I just didn't have the time or resources to kind of, you know, to kind of take on, at least initially. And I think when we started having our conversations and we got to learn a little bit more about Hope for the Day as an organization and what they stood behind, it was something that started resonating with us. I think it's a phenomenal cause. You know, it's funny because I think, you know, me personally growing up in my generation and definitely the generation before mine, I don't think mental health was something that was ever really in the forefront. I don't think we talked about it too much. You know, it's funny because I can definitely be an anxious person and experience anxiety, but as a younger person or even as a younger adult, I never even knew what it was that I was experiencing. I just knew that, oh, my heart's beating faster, you know, I'm having shortness of breath and I'm nervous. Like, I didn't know that there was a word for that. So anyway, I think that as we started kind of brainstorming on the run and just getting to know you guys organically as people, and you seem like cool guys, it made sense. And then you were very receptive to our ideas. As Carl mentioned, initially this was a 5K, and then my sister and myself were just like, you know what? It probably make more sense if we did it as a mile, because then it would be more accessible to the community as a whole. Initially, we wanted to do it in between the flags on Division, and we thought that was super cool to do it as, you know, the flag on Western Avenue and the flag at California as the start and the finish, and that's approximately a mile. And that's kind of how we came into the name, the Humble Mile. And we also thought it would be cheaper and more resourceful to do a mile because we don't have to shut down so many streets to do a 5K. So it all just started to make sense. And then as luck would have it, we started thinking of it only takes one, or, you know, a number of the different sayings and slogans that relate to mental health. One of the names that we tossed out for this race was One damn mile.
Yeah.
One damn mile. And then luckily we convinced them, like, hey, let's bring the community into it, Humble Park, and we named it the Humble Mile.
That was good.
And really what we were inspired by was the Fifth Avenue Mile in New York, which is an awesome road race that I personally haven't had the chance to run, but we kind of modeled it after that.
That's perfect. So as we sort of wrap down...
Can I say one last thing about it?
Oh, no, keep going.
The other awesome thing about the mile distance is that a mile distance is something that the community can take part in. They can come out, they can walk it, they can jog it, they can push strollers, they can bring children, dogs. But it's also a very hard athletic feat for an avid runner. Me personally, I like to run longer distances because I have slow twitch muscles and not necessarily fast twitch muscles. But you're going to get a dude out there or a young lady or whatever it may be that's going to go pedal to the metal and run a mile in less than 5 minutes. And that's a ridiculous athletic effort. So it's appealing to all these different types of groups of people, whether it's someone that's coming off the couch or someone that wants to run a sub 5 minute mile. And that's why the mile also made sense.
Which is, and it, from a business standpoint, that's a good point to bring up is that when we were first doing this, you made a specific point to say, like, make sure we get this USATF certified and make sure we have the chip bib so we don't mess around with, like, guessing people's miles and everything. So we actually, I think it's Brent, we've clocked a sub 5 minute.
Yeah.
We've had two people clock sub 5 minute runs on it. So, and this is, they've just repaved the course that we use.
Yeah.
So people were like, in the past 3 years, we're running through a minefield like to get it. So that's impressive. So maybe we'll see like a sub 450, 430 miles. So.
Yeah.
Lastly, one of the things that's important for people to understand is that the Humble Mile is a big banner event for Hope of the Day, Dark Matter, for a lot of groups. But as you said, running all the time. So let people know, like, what's 312's plans through 2019? And also, how can people, like, hook up with 312?
Yeah. So, you know, 312, as far as I'm concerned and as far as we're concerned as an organization, it's about longevity. You know, we've been in this neighborhood almost 6 years, and we don't plan on going anywhere. And we always want to be a safe space and environment for people to come out, join us, go for a run, socialize. So we feel if we can do that well into the future, like, we're very happy. So we're focused on longevity. You know, we're very excited to execute and help organize the Humble Mile. We always do a number of different types of events surrounding the Chicago Marathon. So the Chicago Marathon is October 13th, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, prior to runners running any marathon for that matter, there's a lot of training that takes place. So you're going to have, you know, if you're doing a traditional training plan, probably about 4 months of training, you know, you're conditioning yourself, you're building up your mileage, and then you're tapering, getting ready for the race. So around that weekend, you want to celebrate, and you don't want to celebrate too hard prior to the race, but you definitely want to let it rip after the race. So the weekend of the marathon, we always host a social run, a shakeout run, a cheer squad for the people who aren't running but are supporting their loved ones at the race, and then a huge blowout party at the Logan Square Auditorium. So everyone is always welcome to attend any and all of our events. We host weekly runs on Tuesday morning at the California Blue Line Station at 5:30 a.m. Anybody is welcome to attend. We host a Tuesday evening run by UIC on Maxwell and Halsted. We host a Thursday evening run starting out of Merchant, which is on Kedzie and Logan. And then we host a Saturday morning run, a number of different runs that we crowdsource on our Facebook page. So that's the way that you can get in tune with us. Our Instagram account, our Facebook is both at 312. I believe our Twitter is at 312. And we just tell everyone, just show up. You don't have to have special clothing or shoes or technology. You don't have to email us before you come. If you do email us, you probably won't even get a response. Just show up.
That's perfect. That's great. And then just for, especially for audio's sake, when you say 312, is that numeric 3 and then the word run and then 2, right?
So at it's number 3, run, the word, and then number 2.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Nico, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Awesome.
Thank you.
So as Hope of the Day's proactive prevention mission has grown on, we've been very fortunate to take some very bold steps in this effort. And we had always had a dream to, you know, we want to maximize and raise the visibility of resources. And when we talk about the proactive suicide prevention vision, this is about ultimately normalizing the conversation on mental health before adversity impacts our lives, but normalizing it so that we're not just talking about this in September during Suicide Prevention Month or May during Mental Health Awareness Month, but that this is a conversation that we feel comfortable having every single day of our lives, because the biggest obstacle to effective suicide prevention and mental health is stigma, the social and cultural factors that try to dictate how we express ourselves. And the reality is that, again, this is a conversation that you can't just have it be one billboard or a fancy commercial. This has got to be something where it's right in front of us all the time, and it's something that we feel safe to communicate. So Sip of Hope, which was a core vision from Johnny Boucher, was this idea of the full realization of the proactive vision, that this would be a place that the minute you walked in, mental health was a normal part of your everyday life, just as much as having a cup of coffee and starting a conversation. This would be a place that you understood it's okay not to be okay. It's a place you can connect with resources. And it was a place that you could take this conversation with you back into your community spaces. And it took a lot of different hands and forces and resources to put this together. We have a tribute wall to a lot of those core people who are part of that vision. But the fact of the matter is that Sip of Hope itself does not exist and continue to operate if we don't have responsible, effective, dynamic leadership and hardworking employees behind us. And, you know, one of the things that we want to make sure we do before everyone leaves today is give a big hand to the active barista staff at Sip of Hope for they had to go through certain levels of unique training, because again, this is not just a coffee shop. This is an experience. This is part of a lifestyle. And so they had to go through unique levels of training just to be able to engage conversations that people are going to have, maybe sometimes for the first time. However, with that, we also needed a sort of captain of the ship. And this was probably one of the biggest, most difficult decisions that we had to make. You know, we had to get it right the first time out. And Hope of the Day, who owns the LLC of Sip of Hope, has been unbelievably fortunate to get the answer right on the first shot. And so today, it's my pleasure to introduce the manager of Sip of Hope, BK. He's going to introduce himself fully, but I like to call him BK, a.k.a. Brian. So, Brian, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, bro. Yeah.
So, you know, it's been an interesting and wild ride, but I think it's important to understand. Let's talk about Brian before Sip of Hope opening. Where was Brian? What's Brian been doing?
Jeez. Let's go back. Graduated high school, and I woke up the next day from Prospect High School, Mount Prospect, Illinois, just outside of Chicago. And I woke up the next day, and my dad was standing over me, and he said, "Go get a job." congratulations, go get a job. And so I was really not happy about that, and I thought summer was already over. And I walked to the nearest place, like store, restaurant, the nearest place to my house was a Starbucks. And so I walked in there and asked for an application. And 3 days later, they interviewed me despite probably never having enjoyed a cup of coffee ever at 18. And started working there and immediately just like fell in love with the environment inside a cafe, and all of a sudden I realized that I really liked people watching. And working at a coffee shop kind of gave me this like maybe like 45 second window into 500 people's lives once a day, and then it reset, and it was just this really interesting experience. Got to meet a lot of cool people, and I developed some really fun relationships outside of the normal people that I would be looking to make friends with or interact with or hang out with after work. Time went by. I think I worked for Starbucks for about 7 years. Really liked it. Felt that we were treated really, really well by the company. The only thing that I felt that they were lacking was like a true, genuine experience. It's really easy in food retail to kind of fake it till you make it, and you just smile and say thank you, and then the next person comes up, and it's the same thing over again. And so I kind of was looking for more of a genuine, real connection with people. And I met a gentleman who was looking to open a restaurant in Edgewater. And he hired me to build his coffee menu out. It was a really fun experience. It definitely gave me a little bit more of creative freedom beyond what was this like kind of corporate thing in place at Starbucks. Again, just got a chance to kind of showcase my barista skills, but working in a restaurant then behind a bar gave me maybe an extra like 15, 20, sometimes an hour worth of conversation with people who are sitting down, not just, you know, running through and grabbing a coffee before work. And so, again, it just kind of increased this experience that I discovered I really, really liked of just interacting with strangers, finding out who they are, what makes them tick, like how their day was going, how yesterday went for them. While I was working there, my wife found out that she had been given a promotion out of state in Boston, and I had never lived anywhere outside of here before. So it was this whole exciting experience, and we moved out there just in time for Johnny, the founder and CEO of Hope for the Day, to text me and say, "Hey, I've got this really great idea. Like, let's collaborate on this, golden job opportunity that I think you'd be great for." And I was like, "I'm in Massachusetts." And so after about a year of living out of state and maintaining contact with Johnny, we learned that we would be moving back to Chicago, which is great news, and that this building that we're in was like actually a real thing. Johnny is a dreamer. I love him. But I wasn't really sure, like, if this was actually like a real thing. Like, how could something so cool actually happen? And moving back, I realized that it was. And so Dark Matter was kind enough to hire me as a barista to bridge the gap between moving back to Chicago and the actual opening of Sip of Hope. And so I was, you know, working there, diving into their culture. And that, I think, was really what drove home of like what the environment here should be like and how we should interact with people. And I really felt that they did a great job of treating first timers, regulars, whoever walked into their shop was treated like they had been there a million times. And the friendships that I saw between the baristas and the people that were customers coming in was exactly what I was looking for. And so I really grabbed onto that and made sure that that was an important thing when we opened up the shop.
That's great. So with the shop now running and sort of take me through, you know, right before it's game time and before that May 3rd, first day opening, you certainly have this background in the barista-ing part, but what were your sort of your thoughts or concerns about the idea of, you know, suicide prevention and mental health are going to be on the table every single day?
Sure.
So did you have any apprehension or thoughts about that, or really sort of tell me about where your connection with mental health comes in on there, you know?
Sure.
So what did you expect?
Well, I had no idea what to expect, which is really scary for me. But you know, it's kind of like mental health is such a broad spectrum that I was more concerned about what could come through the door and how could we ensure that we were properly addressing that person. You know, in my experience working for Starbucks in the city of Chicago, if you've ever been inside a Starbucks in the city of Chicago, you really could see anybody there, from the businessman to the like mom with the stroller to probably someone who looks like they sleep on the streets at night. It's a bathroom to use. They have water. But, you know, over 7 or 8 years of working for Starbucks, we had a lot of like transient homeless people come in and we didn't know what to do. So we called the police. And the police never dealt with it appropriately. It was just, you know, arrest them, get them out, make them leave. And in thinking back on those experiences, my thought was, okay, you know, we could have a student, a mom, a dad, someone could come in who the rest of us would fit into like a normal category and, you know, be seeking help or have some questions. But like, how do we really interact with someone who comes in off the street? You can't just call the police and say, we want this person out, because, you know, our mission is to really engage anyone that comes through that door. And so kind of having all the proper plans and procedure in place with our staff members. And we all were sure of what our plan of action was going to be, depending on what the situation was. So outside of, I mean, I know we've got a capable barista staff. We can sling drinks all day long, but it was more about, you know, what is going to come through the door.
Well, that's good. And I'm glad you brought that up, because we take a lot of pride in the fact that Hope for the Day is such a large organization, and there's some people who are working behind the scenes, some people working, if you think of our board members, things like that. But there's a very specific set of individuals who are basically in the field or on the front line. And before SIP opened, that was, you know, a handful of individuals, people like Johnny and myself and and people who might be part of the education team or outreach teams, now that SIP is open, you've actually become the most consistent, because you guys are open 7 days a week, so I know you're doing more education dates than I'm doing. But you become the very front line of Hope for the Day. So you've acted tremendously, and the staff has been amazing with that. I'd like to know sort of what is it about, you know, we haven't had a mass revolt from the staff yet.
No.
So what do you think, what are sort of like top tips from your sense of management style that you wanted to bring in? Because it does feel like a team. I've sat in on the team meetings here and things like that. And what would you say are sort of like management things you wanted to infuse? I understand the culture part, but what was the management level to deal with the potential for stress and things like that? What did you want to sort of bring into there here?
Well, I think it's important to, as a manager, kind of install yourself as a leader. I would certainly never ask any of my staff members to do anything that, you know, they felt uncomfortable in doing or have a conversation that they didn't feel uncomfortable doing. But really just in the hiring process, I feel like I've gotten a good sense of who is looking for a job and who is looking to, you know, like make an impact. And the people that we hired are looking to make a damn impact. And so we all are kind of aware of what's happening in here. And sometimes these like conversations we have in here are like pretty deep and pretty heavy. And so, you know, making sure that we all have time to recover and kind of decompress after a difficult conversation, and just be aware of our surroundings. I think learning how to engage with folks that come in and are looking to have a conversation has made us all better listeners, but also a better kind of group as a staff. And we all recognize when, all right, like, you know, Brad needs to grab a seat, take a breather, I'll step in and do it. And we're all ready to, because we believe, you know, we believe in this mission. We've seen the impact that it's making. And so just kind of a heightened awareness of our surroundings is really important.
That's really cool. And, you know, before, you know, we let you sort of get back to the hustle, I wanted to ask. So you said you talked about seeing the impact. I'm wondering, what are sort of maybe, you know, I don't want to limit you, but what are some of like the top stories or experiences that you can think of here that really stand out for you thus far?
For me personally, and I've had our staff members relay a lot of interactions and conversations that they've had with folks. But for me personally, it was probably a month after we had been open. It was still kind of quiet in here. We weren't full every single day. But we had someone come in who walked up to the counter like they were a normal customer, ordered a coffee. We said, "How's your day going?" They said, "Great, thanks." Nothing that would stand out as, you know, I'm walking into SIP of Hope seeking help or resources, or I might have some questions. But they took about two steps away from the counter after saying, "Great, thanks," and kind of paused and took a step back and said, "I'm actually not doing okay today." And, you know, we were able to speak with them and lend an ear and listen. And they had been depressed for quite some time and going through some anxiety recently about some relationship issues, and were concerned that the act of seeking help would appear as a weakness to their friends and their family. And really just after engaging that person, we were able to, A, make sure that they left with some really great local resources, and B, kind of build up their confidence. I've done counseling. Several of my staff members have done counseling or are active in some form. And so relating those personal shared experiences, really we could see the blood come back in that person's face. They were not comfortable in that conversation, but I think that we were able to make them feel safe and heard, and that their concerns were valid. And that was just like huge. That was huge to me. And then another conversation that will really stick with me was a woman that came in She had her young newborn baby in the stroller with her, and she immediately said at the counter, before even ordering a drink, "My friends told me that I should drop by and that you guys do suicide prevention work." I said, "Yeah, what's up? Like, welcome to Sip of Hope." And she relayed that she had recently lost her sister to suicide, and that her family was not talking about it in a way that was allowing her to heal, and that she had kind of developed this sense of shame that her sister had taken her own life. And in doing so, she would bump into a friend and they would say, "My gosh, I'm so sorry about your sister's loss." And she would say, "Thank you." And what she wanted to say was she wasn't doing well and she wasn't able, to seek treatment or seek help. And we didn't know. And, we were able to have a really great conversation about why there's nothing to be ashamed of, in seeking treatment, and why it matters how you talk about things like that and how stigma can have an impact on a future conversation. But in addition to that, letting her know that as a survivor, that was a trauma that she had experienced and her family had experienced. And so it was important for her also as a survivor to seek some treatment or find someone to talk to in some way, shape, or form. And I think that she felt very reassured, again, that her feelings that she was having, that she shouldn't feel guilty about this, but the way that people around her were having that conversation was making her kind of afraid to have that conversation.
That's awesome. And it comes back to the fact that because we keep things silent on mental health so consistently, this place, isn't a drop-in center. It's not direct services. It's a safe haven. It's a rallying point. But unfortunately, the reality is for many people who can walk through here, this does unintentionally become a place where they open up a floodgate, because we are so socially conditioned to stay silent, to put on a game face and keep everything silent, so that the minute someone even gives you like a little bit of light, it can really be that floodgate experience. Because if you think of your mental health like a bottle of soda, we're always experiencing things that can build up pressure and feel like we're exploding. And the art of conversation is one of the most powerful valves we have to let that pressure out. So I think with that, I'm delighted to have you on Conversations Cafe, because as a representation of the greater Sip of Hope staff, it's so important for people to see and understand just the level and gravity of what all of you signed up for and what you oversee as the leader of this, this frontline team of the Hope of the Day mission. So, Brian, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Carl.
Moving into our next guest, as we talked about when we talk about the Humble Mile and the Proactive Prevention mission, it takes a community. And when you tell the story of Hope for the Day, and we are working on a book, but when you tell the story of Hope for the Day,
coffee table.
When you tell this story of Hope for the Day, one of the first five chapters is going to have to be talking about Dark Matter Coffee. They were effectively the first homies who put us on in terms of being a community partner that wanted to mess with us when we were an itty bitty little group, when it was sort of Johnny Boucher and like one or two other stragglers sort of running around. But they've been with us hand in hand as we've grown and taken new steps. And it's very important to understand sort of where they as an organization come from. So we do a lot of things with Dark Matter Coffee, and we'll dive into that. But it's my absolute pleasure to introduce the first partner in prevention of Hope for the Day, Dark Matter Coffee, represented by the Minister of Propaganda, Kyle Hodges. Thank you, Kyle, for joining us.
Thank you.
Ooh. So, Kyle, let's first talk about the DMC wavelength. tell me where you are and all that, and then a little bit about Dark Matter's history. So.
Okay. I'm the Minister of Propaganda.
What does that mean?
it's a utility tool. No, it started out just, you know, started doing marketing, branding, social media, all that stuff. So to have something creative instead of being a marketing director, just created Minister of Propaganda. Well, sounds a little bit better, a little more sinister than marketing director kind of thing. It's just evolved as we go along, a little bit more strategic development and, you know, just growing as the company grows. Dark Matter's been around for, we are going on year, almost year 13. Started out at Star Lounge Coffee Bar. And the space right above there started roasting on small 8-pound roasters. Fast forward, we are just opened our 6th location and on 150-pound roasters. So to give scalability there, yeah, we used to do maybe 100 pounds of roasted coffee a week, and now we're doing 12,500 pounds of coffee right. roasted a week. So a little bit of growth, but very much dependent upon our community as well, too, to make that growth. We wouldn't be here without them. So
let's talk about that. One thing I would tell people, like, sort of behind the scenes is when I first started in Hope for the Day and sort of building a direction and joining Johnny Boucher's mission with this organization, I copycatted a lot of, like, how I was going to work as Johnny's number two from Kyle. And he gave me a lot of, like, consulting and input. But talk about the Dark Matter culture. You know, this is a really distinct group. Sip of Hope serves Dark Matter coffee because it's definitely the best coffee. But the Dark Matter sort of vibe and culture, where does that come from? What is it really about? Like,
It's a culture about just being true to yourself and to your friends and your family. I mean, it's we actively make decisions that we feel should be represented not only by us, but as a signal in the community. It's very easy to always say yes and do the easiest thing, you know, what's going to get you the most attention, what's going to make the most money, what's going to be the most direct route to a goal. But that most direct route doesn't always produce the fruit that it needs to. And it does not build that sense of community or culture because it's easy. And so it's a situation that we've all maintained a family kind of atmosphere. And I mean that as in good, bad, and ugly. You know, families fight, we fight, we're friends, you know, we go through hardships and good things together. But we're actively trying to, you know, when we bring people on board and not only partnerships, Hope for the Day, but actually, you know, baristas and other employees, it's something that we actually have to, you have to take a step back and consider that person coming in and being a representative of what they're doing, what you're doing, and make sure that they're on board with it. We wouldn't have had the growth and we wouldn't have had the impact in the community without people literally buying into the program. You know, you have to be willing to put in the work, and you have to be willing to make you know, sacrifices. We ask a lot of our staff, not only to be outspoken members of Dark Matter, but to, like, include mental health training and first aid and be active part of our community and do things because that's what we need to do, not the easy way out. So
I love that. One of the biggest things I can say about Dark Matter when I first started getting familiar with them was authenticity, a sense of no BS and very much sticking to this, meeting Jesse and sort of seeing his influences, meeting you, meeting Aaron, meeting Carrie, meeting all of the general family. So the Humboldt Mile, But putting this together, obviously, is part of one of the core founding groups here. Where did you see Dark Matter? You know, what? Why did Dark Matter say yes? Let's do this. Let's go in on this.
It's in our neighborhood, with Hope for the Day. It's part of the community, and it's going to make a positive impact. So, if there's four answers that go against that, or five that would say that don't do it, then we would listen. But that those four good answers right there. And I mean, that's kind of what we do. I mean, in a sense of you know, we're made up of I can say hodgepodge. My last name's Hodges, so I can throw that in all around. We're made up of a hodgepodge of people. And everybody has different interests and things they want to do. But it's doing events like the Humboldt Mile and pulling everybody in together to say, you may not be into this, but you're into the community, you're into what we're doing. So why don't you come and help us out and we'll do this together. And that's what that event is. It just, it brings people out that normally would not.
That's great.
They can't do Absolutely. One damn mile. You know?
That was a good discussion.
Yeah.
So with that, one of the things that I sort of want to like tie in here is this. When I look at the way you guys all talk about making the beans, getting it in, whether it's the bag, over the counter, getting it into a can, it's all about passion, right? There's a lot of passion in what you're doing. And I was just sort of wanted to hear sort of touching on how Dark Matter really, I mean, you guys really went all in on sort of bringing the proactive messaging into not just our resources in your stores or things like that, but creating mandates to train your staff, mm-hmm. Holding fundraiser events like the Dark Matter Block Party, which is July 6th of this year. Mark your calendars. It's going to be awesome.
Not announced yet, but it's okay.
All right, we'll edit that out. But sort of talk about, like, what was, you know, what brought that in? You know, you guys went all in on sort of bringing this message in as an organization. And so about suicide prevention, I mean, mental health. And
that's part of that buy-in philosophy, that buy-in mentality is it's just, you know, we could hire somebody and train them to be a barista and they could be a barista and that's it. But that doesn't help anybody else out. That doesn't help other people who work for Dark Matter out. That doesn't help our community out. And so that's what I mean by buying in. You're literally coming in and saying, okay, like, I want to be part of this. I don't want to be just a barista, you know. We're more interested in somebody who has zero coffee experience and says, I want to be a part of that. You know, that's great. Okay, that's what we can work with instead of, you know, somebody that just says, I've got the best latte art. Like, okay. That's cool, but what does that do? Like, what besides making a cup of coffee, what can you do? Because we have a lot of exposure to people all over the city, and we have a responsibility to make their time when they're with us, whether they're in our shop or they're just getting their morning coffee or afternoon, what have you. It's our jobs to make sure that they are comfortable and that our service is up to par. And with that comes opportunities like with, you know, Hope for the Day to engage them and to make their day better, you know. And we see what Hope for the Day is doing as a positive impact on everyday lives and a lot of the people that we interact with, not only our staff as well. I mean, we have a very, very diverse staff, and we feel like that, you know, Hope for the Day's message is not only important to a lot of our staff members, but especially to a lot of our customer base who we feel like are more connected with us now because we're able to provide a better service for them because of our work we've done with you guys and because of the education we received and just communication to people.
Well, that's great. And I really appreciate you sharing that. So we know the Humble Miles, June 1st, mm-hmm. going down. Maybe since it feels like I kind of screwed the pooch on one thing, maybe tell us a little bit about what else Dark Matter's got going down in 2019 before we cut out.
No so, worries.
I kind of messed that one up.
Oh, man.
Because you guys seem to always be doing like some cool stuff.
We're doing way too much stuff. Way too much stuff. In a good way. In a good way. We just opened the new location, Chocolate City Coffee Palace and Bodega.
Where's that at?
2015 West Grand, which is like the southwest corner of Grand and Damon. Its main purpose is to create coffee cold as a production facility with the cans. And then it has a small bodega in the front, and like literally a bodega where it's selling everything from like beef jerky and Little Debbie's to pretty cool ice cream that has our coffee and the chocolate we import in, co-op hot sauce, cheese that has our coffee in it, pinatas, if you need a pinata, we have pinatas. So that's opening. We're working on another location simultaneously. It's going to be around the Belmont area. I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
I have no idea when that's opening. We're just getting the
electric mud
done.
We just had
electric mud in October, right at the Blue Line stop on Western. The Block Party July 6th.
You heard it here first, folks.
Block Party July 6th. I'm trying to think of what else. Multiple collaborations coming out. We got some more vinyl record collaborations. We got a couple band collaborations for Riot Fest and some of the other Lollapalooza.
Okay. All right.
But, yeah.
So where can people keep in touch with DMC online?
What's your first name? Darkmattercoffee.com. On the Facebooks or all of the Facebooks. We have every location has their own Facebook page. Instagram. Yeah, Instagram is darkmattercoffee.com. Twitter. That's interesting. People still use Twitter.
Yeah.
Dark Matter, what is it? Dark Matter 2521.
Yeah, it's the weird number. Like,
okay. Yeah, I didn't make that one up. That was crazy. Yeah. So all there. We're
around. That's perfect. So thank you so much. As I said before, Hope of the Day, Dark Matter was sort of one of our first partners in prevention, create a lot of the modeling for our in-the-field education. And we've always been forever thankful for having you as a core partner. So Kyle Hodges, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks, buddy. Conversations Cafe, obviously the idea is to be talking about multiple intersections for mental health in our communities. And just like the Humble Mile, which again is June 1st, Saturday, you can still register, onemilerun.org. That's part of Just Like Sip of Hope, and our partnership in prevention with Dark Matter Coffee is all part of the Hope for the Day Proactive Suicide Prevention vision. And this is a vision that I joined in the early summer of 2013, maybe a little bit earlier, right? Like playing around with a grant. But this was part of a team that we've grown and evolved by leaps and bounds. And I generally describe myself as sort of like number two on this battleship. But the first person to launch this pirate ship basically in 2011 after the completion of his mentor, Mike Scanlon, is Johnny Boucher. This is our CEO and founder, Johnny Boucher. Welcome.
Yay!
So, I think one of the things, just, you know, for the recording posterity's sake,
yeah,
to talk about is really, let's just, Johnny, tell us about you as a kid.
Yeah. So, all right, Johnny as a kid.
Johnny, tell us about Johnny pre-2011 and Mike's
computer. Yeah. So I was born in Peoria, Illinois, raised in the northwest suburbs in Long Grove. And if anybody knows where Long Grove, Illinois is, I'll tell you the first thing, we didn't come with Long Grove money. My parents were the people that loved old farmhouses, so I grew up in old farmhouses, and sometimes I was labeled as the poor kid. I really didn't care. because it was what was going on inside that was truly, you know, profound and special. Both my parents, my mom was from northern Wisconsin, my dad's from Peoria. So when they met, you know, it's my dad's 6'6", my mom's 5'1". It's just this really beautiful thing. But they both came from really dysfunctional families. So growing up, communication was key. Also, community was key. I am Filipino. I'm Irish, German. And it's, you know, it's interesting when, you know, your parents come together and they want to push so much of, like, the community that is bigger than just themselves in front of you at all times. And my dad's family did that a lot, too. One, because a lot of my dad's brothers were, you know, in jail. So we got to know a lot of people at jail down in Peoria. But it was also my other side of my dad's family was we're all lawyers. And they were just very well known in the Peoria area. And the more that they knew the community, more they were open to tragedy. And they were open up to good things and bad things about life. But the one thing that they always did was they talked about it. So growing up, I'd go to like family outings or like Christmas, and I would be hearing about certain things happening in Peoria. What I didn't understand really as a kid was that like the community was always in the room until later in my teenager years, where my parents kind of pushed me to remind my friends that our house was a safe house. So at the age of 13, I started booking punk rock shows even down the street from here at the Fireside Bowl to bring my friends to shows, because we were in a very privileged area. In Stevenson High School, where we all went to high school, was, you know, 6,000, you know, students, all walks of life. And for me, my parents were just like, look out for your friends, let them know they got a place here. And the more we became friends with more people at school, the more we were exposed to things like, you know, parental abuse, drug abuse, alcohol abuse. And my parents were just like, oh, come here. And my mom literally had the nickname Oprah because everyone would just go and talk to my mom. So with that, you know, it instilled like look out for my friends, but also keep doing shows and be a part of a bigger community. And when I really started investing my time into the punk rock scene, I got to know a lot of people that I never knew. And some of those people became really good friends of mine. And sadly, some of those people are people I've personally lost to suicide too. And just like I said earlier, you know, the more we open our doors to community, the more we know about tragedy. So as I was growing up and I wanted to remain in the music industry, I advanced my career. I worked in the Christian music industry. I'm not really religious. If you believe, that's awesome. If you don't believe, that's awesome. Do your thing. For me, it was doing the same thing. It was providing a safe place for community and just kind of following my parents' guidelines of just like look out for everyone. And that's where I worked for Mike Scanlon. Mike was my boss, my mentor, the guy who believed in me. He was the guy that like made me feel like I actually went to school and learned something and I could apply it, because I was his marketing and advertising director. But the thing about Mike is that he was my Robin Williams. He was the guy that had everything. I had a set of keys to his Range Rover. I was very, very in the know of some of the vices that were taking on, you know, taking his life. And it was alcohol abuse. He did a lot of cocaine, unfortunately, but he still showed up. He was still present. And I felt like I could have a real conversation with him whenever I needed to. But sadly, in 2011, I was down, or I'm sorry, 2010, I was down in Mexico with my dad, and I got a phone call that Mike jumped off his fifth floor balcony in Lincoln Park. And, you know, it was just one of those things that like took the air out of my lungs, and I was just shocked, you know, because the Mike I knew, if he had a bad day, he'd go to Burton's place and, you know, do his thing. But he would still be there the next day. And sadly, you know, when Mike took his life, I was shocked, just like the world was shocked when Robin Williams, like one of the funniest people, took his life. So I was determined to do something about it, but I was also burnt out from the music industry already. And I didn't want to go work for some of Mike's competitors. And at the same time, my dad actually had been fired and laid off from the Wrigley Gum Company after they were acquired by Mars. And it was just this pivotal moment in my life where I saw my dad, who had pledged his, you know, a career to a company and really kind of got left behind. And I also saw like an opportunity to do something that still maybe involved music, still maybe involved community, but I just wanted to let people know that, you know, there's help out there. And actually coming up on Saturday, May 25th, is the 8-year anniversary when it's the realest story in the world. I was down at 906 North Damon at my old apartment. I was thinking about Mike, and I started writing on a list how many people I'd lost to suicide. And so when I did that, I also accompanied it with a bottle of whiskey. I drank the entire bottle of whiskey. I got my laptop out and I was crying, and I went on cyberdriveillinois.com and I registered Hope for the Day to be a company, and fuck, that's a long time ago.
Well, my sweaty tongue.
No, it's all good. This shit's awesome. If you don't cry, you're not really human. So, but it's just wild because it's like 8 years ago. That's a long time ago. And I didn't know anything. I woke up the next day, bought Nonprofits for Dummies, the book from Barnes & Noble, because I was like, if these people figured it out and got it published, maybe I should learn something from them. Because I think the coolest thing about Hope for the Day is that we don't walk in and say we're experts. We learn every day. Today, I learned a lot. Yesterday, we all learned a lot. And sometimes, because we're growing so big, you know, Brian's learning a lot here. Mike's learning a lot. And maybe the suburbs are doing education. Carl's in a different suburb doing education. We're all learning together because we're growing together. But it was all based off of this idea that, hey, maybe we can just take our pain and do something with it. And so, you know, a lot of things were thrown at the walls, and a lot of things, there's a lot of late nights before Carl was around that I was just trying to chip away and figure out what I wanted to do, how we could have our role in this community. And so when people were like, hit me up on LinkedIn, they're like, oh, congratulations, your work anniversary. I don't know what they're talking about. I'm like, what work anniversary? I'm like, who knows? Like, we're just going every day. And the coolest thing about all this is that it started with just this idea that if Mike was number 9 on a list of 16 people that I personally lost to suicide, I couldn't be the only one. And it says it on this hand, see something, say something. The more we start, you know, I started talking about mental health and utilizing my platform of like putting on punk rock shows and distributing resources very easily, more people were like, yo, I've lost. Or, oh my gosh, this is something I need. Or I know a friend who needed this. So I was like, oh, this makes sense. We don't have to be the direct services. We could just be the people that are, you know, going to the punk rock shows and kind of meeting the misfits wherever they are. And that was like, I was like, oh, like this aha moment came on. So I started going into every organization here in the city of Chicago that was doing mental health. And I literally just crowned the Kool-Aid man of mental health, because I'd barge in and be like, hey, my name is Johnny. I started this organization called Hope for the Day, and I really want to do something. And then people are like, and we won't say some names, but like there were some people that thought I was actually looking for help. But what it did was it just got me, it showed me what was the community and how we were going to be a part of the community. So one of the things we don't talk about or say at Hope for the Day is competitors. We don't have competitors. We have community members, because we are brutally honest with the fact that it's going to take more than just Hope for the Day to solve this crisis, right? But it's also about doing it with your friends and doing it with others, because, you know, life is short, and it's a lot cooler when you do things with people that you care about. And, you know, it's funny, when you invite people to the conversation, you don't know how they're going to react. And it's funny because every person who was up here before me played a pivotal role in one way or another. Brian used to do, BK used to be a security guard at some of the shows I would do in Arlington Heights at the Knights of Columbus Hall. His wife and I went to college together. And then I was also one of, you know, the members of his wedding. And that was way before this, you know, but then you go to Dark Matter. Not only were they our first partner in prevention, Kyle Hodges drove me to the very first tour date to meet our bus for our first outreach on the Vans Warped Tour in 2014. It was the biggest thing that we had ever done outside of be friends with Dark Matter and show up here locally. We were able to do access to, you know, we had access to 500,000 youth, and that was when we became the first charity on the Vans Warped Tour to start speaking on stage. And it started out with, hey, how can we get a couple hundred speeches over the course of the summer, to, you know, over 5 years, over 1,200 speeches just given by me in front of thousands and, you know, collectively millions of people, was started by, hey, how are we going to do this? How are we going to afford this? We didn't have the money. But then, oh, shit, how are we going to get to the tour bus so we can go do it? And Kyle's like, I'll drive you. And he drove me to you know, outside of Indianapolis, and it was just like, thanks, man. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to see my mom. And but, you know, it's just crazy, because not only did they play a huge role in this, but they were like way back in the day. Nico, you know, coming from 3-Run-2, like, obviously Carl and I are like really, really good runners. You know, we run while we were like working, like, swear to God, our minds are running for sure. But, you know, we wanted to get into lifestyle, because that's really what Hope Today is. We're a lifestyle brand that has a massive mission that also backs up that mission by providing the work that we claim we're doing. And it's so much cooler when you invite people to the party, right? Whether it's an agent of impact or it's a new partner in prevention, it's about knowing our place. And our place is we know how to start the conversation. We got the resources. We got the education to back it up. And we also have a really cool, like, little system. As long as we don't piss people off, we can do whatever we want to break the silence around mental health, even if it does take pissing off a little people. And recently, talking about a partner in prevention, Old Irving Brewing, we released Hops for Hope. It was the first beer can that we had full rights of designing, because we work with the alcohol industry, because one of those people that's on that list of 16 is my Uncle John, who literally drank himself to death. He was found with a bottle of Delmore Scotch in his hand like he was every day, but sadly his heart rate was no longer there. So is it my uncle's fault or is it Delmore's fault that they had a good product? It's my uncle's fault. And it's what better way than to meet people that are just like my uncle, maybe struggling with, you know, alcohol abuse, or maybe just knowing that they're hitting the bottle a little too hard. Now, that bottle may have resources on it, but we'd rather do that than just claim, you know, alcohol is a depressant. We can point the finger of blame, because that's not how we do this thing. And by being proactive, we got to do things, unfortunately, a little unconventionally, because that's how we get, you know, we take steps to advance it. But the best thing that we can also do is work with these partners on educating their communities and their consumers on how to be proactive too, because we're a small organization that's growing every day, but we can't be in every corner of the country nor the world, yet we want to be. But by allowing people to be a part of Hope for the Day in any way, shape, or form, whether it's an agent of impact, maybe it's just getting involved with education, we're allowing that, and that's the best thing that we could ever do, because, I mean, we're in this together, and it's not just a cheesy statement, it's the truth. And we're constantly inviting it, because everybody has a seat at the table that is known as Hope for the Day. So
that's perfect.
Yeah.
So I had a whole list of questions. You answered them all, which is fine. I mean, you know, I think we hit on the key points, and I've certainly talked about the starting with the vision that you really brought a lot of people in. You certainly, this could have been easy for you to want to have people just show up and do a bunch of work and then, you know, have it just be whatever John wants, right?
Yeah.
And this has really turned into like a group thing.
Oh,
where
yeah.
We're developing ideas, we're creating ideas, active, there's new ideas always coming. We have people in this very room who have fostered new ideas and things into being.
Yeah.
It's Chris over there, Sarah over here.
Yeah.
Social media people. So I think an appropriate way to close this out.
Power clap.
Well, before, also, I think as part of bringing in the community,
yeah,
just talk about Matt's thing, because it's part of one of our biggest missions. So, two things. One of our biggest missions, when we talk about raising the visibility, one of the strongest things you can be doing is taking this out of a place like Sip of Hope, whether it's on a shirt, a wristband, or just verbally, being able to talk about mental health and suicide prevention to someone you know. That is so powerful, being able to break down the silence and the barriers that we socially just don't put up. But one of the other more powerful things is these kind of partnerships where we're working with people and creatives and things like that. And we want to talk about that for a second.
So this coffee shop is not just because of Hope for the Day and Dark Matter. It's because of like the artist Matthew Hoffman, the artist Lauren Asta. You know, there's another lady, Heather, who is married to one of Dark Matter staff, who came in here and picked out some of the color schemes with me. And the whole thing was to lift other people up. And Matthew's known for the You Are Beautiful project, but he's also known for being part of a lot of typography projects. And so when I approached him, I said, hey, you inspired me to put some big letters on my wall. You want to put them on there for us and help us out? And he said, actually, yes. You know, and he said why mental health was important to him. And actually, he ended up donating that piece to us, which is absolutely amazing, because that helps him just as much as it helps us and helps every customer in here, because it's not only a great message, but it's eye-catching, but it also gets you to back to him. I mean, back to the other people. Lauren Asta, you see Lauren Asta's art around here, around the city a lot more now, and we are grateful to be one of the first people that she got down with. And it's just amazing, because people will see her in the West Loop doing a piece, and they're like, oh my gosh, you did Sip of Hope, and it's a connection that was maybe never there. And there's so many things in here that you could take away and go out there, but bring them back. And that's the beautiful thing about all this, is that we provide the tools so anyone can be a part of it, but then you see no bigger, you know, bigger, small, like especially right here, all these are all people that help fund this project. There's bands, there's companies, and then there's also, you know, people that are no longer here that their families were like, well, we want to be a part of this. And that's because we're in this together. So if you have a platform, figure out how to utilize it with us, because you never know who might be struggling in your community, your workplace, school, whatever, because we're all human beings and we all have brains. We have good days and bad days. Literally yesterday, it felt like we were in the UK, and today it feels like we're in Miami for a bit. Like it was hot. Yeah. And now it's about the storm. So, you know, but it's all about, you know, inviting people. And the idea is that what we see in here, we can create. And it's exciting to know that Matthew and I have been like, well, how do we make this larger and put it somewhere outdoors one day? You know, so it's a permanent art installation, just like you've seen the You Are Beautiful project. Lauren has, you know, been able to make her career here in Chicago. And it's because she gave, you know, she gave to this and she's part of this. But people are able to appreciate her work and support her outside of this, just like people are able to appreciate not only a good cup of coffee, but the best damn cup of coffee and available in the city of Chicago, because Dark Matter is a part of it. You know, so it might be just Hope for the Day here or the staff. It's really the community. And it's a lot cooler when you do everything with everyone. So thank you for being here. And if you want to get involved, get involved. The keys are yours.
That's perfect. So with that, as we close down Conversations Cafe today, before we do the thing, a little bit of housekeeping. One, next month's episode is going to be titled Pride. It's the third Wednesday of the month. I don't have my date in front of me. What was it? also, these experiences are completed with you here as part of the community, as part of bringing that conversation forward. So I want to give a big thank you to our guests. I want to give a big thank you to the Sip of Hope staff, to BK, but I also want to give a big thank you to all of you currently as audience and just participants here.
Yeah, round of applause.
Guests here. And finally, we're just going to close out this recording with the way we close out our staff meetings. So, John, you can just take it away.
So, I'm a Lululemon ambassador, and I did a retreat with them, and I learned the power of a power clap about how to do it the right way, and you want to invite everyone. So, everyone, get your hands ready. If you got a drink in your hand, all right, all right. So, to my people on my right, to my people on my left, meet in between, one, two, three. Ooh, that was good. Good job, everyone. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, everyone.
Yeah,
good night.
Yeah.
Thank you so very much for joining us this week. We hope you had as good a time listening as we had recording the interview. Don't forget to check out anthologiesofhope.com/playlist for all the awesome songs that will get added each week. You can find us on social media at Anthologies of Hope on Facebook and Instagram, and Anthologies Pod on Twitter. It would be great if you could subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or Google, and leave us a review. As always, remember, everyone has a story, and it's about time we start listening.
traveling.